All right, well, should we get this show on the road?
No, let's just record it here.
Oh, that's no fun. Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your host, Jorn Sutai Vampyr and Jajim Vestai Jajim, will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Welcome to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. I am Jajim.
I am Jorn.
And today we are going to talk about A Flag Full of Stars by Brad Ferguson, published in April of 1991. So, John, why don't you give us a brief summary of the plot from the back of the book?
Yeah, I should point out, too, that he says it's April 1991. That is before Star Trek III was made, before Mark Okrand came along, was called in to build the Klingon language for Star Trek that they've used ever since. Mm-hmm. So you will hear in this book Klingonese used instead of Klingon whole.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I really mean they're going to call the Klingon language Klingonese. You're not going to really hear any Klingonese.
Yeah, there isn't very much.
No. So, okay, what's going on in this book? Well, this is part of a series of books that literally is taking place between the time Kirk steps down as captain of the Enterprise and Star Trek the Motion Picture. It has been 18 months since the Starship Enterprise completed her historic 5-year mission, and her legendary crew has separated. Well, by legendary crew, 3 of them have gone different ways. The rest are still there.
Mm-hmm.
Taking new assignments that span the galaxy. On Earth, Admiral James T. Kirk has married and started a new life as the chief of Starfleet operations, where he is overseeing the refit of his beloved ship, now commanded by a new captain, Willard Decker. Kirk's only tie to his former crewmates is his chief of staff, a young lieutenant commander named Kevin Riley. And throughout this whole book, I am surprised at Kirk's reactions to what Kevin pulls off, because Kevin Riley was in the entire series, technically, of Star Trek, the original series.
Mm.
He was there from first season on. Okay, well, anyhow, getting back to the back of the book. But Kirk's new quiet life changes when he meets a scientist named G'Darth, who is on the brink of perhaps the greatest scientific discovery in a century. G'Darth's invention could mean tremendous strides in Federation technology, or in the wrong hands, the subjugation of countless worlds. When Klingon agents capture this new technology, Admiral Kirk and Lieutenant Commander Riley are all that stands between peace and devastation for the entire Federation. You know, after reading that description, I could tear the book in half and start reading halfway through, because they just, nothing that happened in the first half of the book matters.
Okay.
Yet, in the first half of the book, we get the launch of the saucer section. Okay, I should point this out. In this book, the Starship Enterprise is being repaired by having the saucer section detached and brought back down to Earth so that the repair people can use the gravity and atmosphere of Earth to make their jobs easier. So they have to launch the saucer section to get it back up to the engineering section and get it reattached.
Right. And, oh, I don't know. There's
you don't see that.
There's a lot of story set up here, though.
Oh, yeah, there is. It's just I'm talking about, if you just go with the plot description, the plot summary, it sounds like nothing happens till the middle of the book.
Okay. All right, I get you.
And even then, And even then, Kirk does not meet this scientist until he rescues the scientist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Okay, I am going to give you my overall impressions of this book. It's not a long book, only about 224 pages, and I think the author did a really good job sticking to the principal story with a few subplots to flesh out. As far as the main plot, I enjoyed getting a look at a Klingon who is a high school teacher to human kids. I like the way he focused on relations between races and was tolerant of those with less than positive opinions of what Klingons are.
You mean turtleheads?
Yeah. Yes. Gadath may have been only a scientist and a teacher, but he also showed he could handle himself if it became necessary. It seems that all Klingons are given at least a basic knowledge of the martial arts. I wouldn't expect any less. As a teacher, I couldn't imagine teaching a classroom full of Klingon teenagers, so I was really impressed with the way the author presented Gadath. What about you?
Well, let's dive into that a little bit more.
Okay.
My understanding, Gadath was a scientist.
Yes.
Not trained as a teacher, but the only job he could get when he came to Earth was as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So he had no, what you guys would call credentials for actually being a teacher. He was more like, when I was teaching at community college, you didn't need a teaching background. You needed a background in the field that you were going to be teaching.
Right.
And if I remember correctly, Gadath wasn't even teaching astrophysics, was he?
No. It seemed like he was more of a social studies teacher.
Which is totally outside of his background.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it may have been outside of his background or his training, but who better than a Klingon scientist to talk about these things? I mean, he was definitely qualified to talk about relationships between the Klingon Empire and the Federation from his upbringing, I'm sure.
I was going to say, and upbringing is probably the more important of the aspects, because Gadath was a ridged Klingon.
Mm-hmm.
In a time where the albino has not cured everybody of the affliction mm-hmm. imposed on him during the Enterprise era. And in Klingon society, you literally had a two-tiered system. You had the smooth-headed Klingons and the rigid-headed Klingons,
mm-hmm.
with the rigid-headed Klingons being the upper strata of Klingon society.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that brings, why is Gadath on Earth? He's a member of the upper class because he's ridged.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the feeling that he was run out of Kronos and not thought of real well here on Earth, because he couldn't find a job anywhere else, despite the fact that he was a scientist working on a really important project using his own funds.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is with his idea, I think it was completely secret. I don't think anybody but him knew about it. And, you know, perhaps on Kronos, he was actually not considered important.
Well, the thing was, if we go back to the Keith DeCantio books that we've covered months ago, the mere fact that he's a scientist working on an important new project would give him negative, a negative thing in his society.
Mm-hmm.
Look how much trouble that female doctor had trying to bring medicine up to a standard where she could return warriors to the field.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Borok, she definitely was being shunned. If it hadn't been for Clagg, she'd have been out somewhere else.
Yeah. So you got to wonder, you know, is he suffering the same fate on Kronos?
Yeah, could very well be.
And despite the fact that I think one of the positive sides of this book is the fact that we literally get to see a Klingon who's a non-warrior doing a job.
Well, I just got to wonder, though, if, you know, he did not divulge what he was trying to do as a scientist. So if nobody knew anything, he wasn't being very productive as a scientist. So therefore, he's also not a warrior. So what use would he be?
Yeah. Well, so, you don't know what he was doing on Kronos. We don't see anything of him until he gets here to Earth.
Right.
And he was keeping all of his work. Well, he's keeping all of his work hidden. But the way he talks about it, you got to wonder, was he keeping his work hidden because he wanted it to be a fait accompli, and then he could decide who gets it, a lot like, you know, Morbius in Forbidden Planet, rather than getting funds to work on this thing, and then the people who funded him would have this device that could take them anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But yeah, he wound up teaching anyway, and which is what he was looking for on Earth. He was looking for a job at a university. And of course, if you work at a university, you are expected to lecture.
Not necessarily.
Well, I guess, but I, you know, in my experience, that's what it's been, and nobody's going to hire him simply because he's a Klingon. All right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, well, you've got a statement here in the notes on your overall impressions of the book, I'll point out. So, go ahead.
Covering your bases, I see.
Yeah, you darn right. I'm not going to open that door again. All right, go ahead.
What?
Your overall impressions of the book.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you'd...
That's why I couldn't figure out what you were saying. Was there something I missed?
Oh, I didn't know if you had more to say about Kirk and Riley and that, so forth and so on.
No, they in the book, I mean, if you want to talk about Kirk and Riley, they both got marital problems.
Yeah.
Going down, and the problem with storytelling is we know Kirk has got to get divorced or something before Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Yeah.
Because literally in the Wrath of Khan, he's in an apartment by himself.
Yes, he is.
So
surrounded by antiques, just like he is.
Yeah. So if you're going to throw something like this into a story, it's got to be able to stick somehow. It can't be a matter of, well, we know what's got to happen before the end of it, so we know this ain't real.
Right. So, yes.
Now, with Riley, it doesn't matter because he doesn't continue on into the movies.
No.
I'm assuming he's staying at Starfleet administrative offices as some sort of chief of staff or somebody.
Yeah. Well, he is Kirk's chief of staff.
Right.
And
but he's not going to backslide to become somebody's secretary or worse.
No.
When Kirk moves on back to the Enterprise, Riley will find another job as another person's chief of staff.
Well, see, now I don't know. Are you sure, or would he go up and become an officer on whatever ship Kirk was on?
Up is okay.
Yeah.
Up would be okay. Down is what I'm saying. He wouldn't have happened. And we don't see Riley in any of the movies.
No. Well, I know. But the books are not canon, so you wouldn't necessarily need to see Riley in the movies. In order for him to still be around. There's a lot of things that happen in the book that don't reflect in the films.
True.
So the only rule is when the book is done, everything is back the way it was before it started. So that it doesn't mess with canon. And,
yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So,
but in this case, what I'm saying is canon is going to come afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And in canon, we don't see Riley.
No, not after the Enterprise. So we have to kind of say,
and technically speaking, we're supposed to see every member of the Enterprise crew in the hangar deck in Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Mm-hmm.
They've got one scene in there. They even have B.J.O. Trimble in that scene.
Yes, when they're watching the V'ger device liquefy
right.
The Klingons, yes.
So I'm just saying that in this case, the book has a storyline in it.
Yes.
That we know can't move forward into the movies.
Yeah.
So Riley is going to have to disappear.
Yep. And
He's a character that's safe to kill.
Yeah. But, you know, the relationship here between Kirk and Riley is very interesting. Okay, so the lore of this is, of course, Kirk was on...
You are aware that he hadn't been built yet, right?
What's that?
Lore. He hadn't been built yet.
Not that kind of lore.
Oh.
Not the android. Okay.
You gave me a straight line.
Yes, I did. I fed you the line. All right. So on Tarsus 4, when Kodos declared that half the colony was to be liquidated, Kirk, of course, he survived and found Riley as a small child, a baby, actually, and Kirk's saved him. So apparently, and according to this book, Kirk has been watching Riley all his life and taking care of him.
If I remember correctly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but didn't Kodos have Riley's entire family on the list of to be purged?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And Kirk almost got caught up in that. Now, I read a book a few years ago that went beyond that episode, Conscience of the King, and followed things as they went on after Kodos escaped from Tarsus IV. Okay, and I cannot...
Yeah, I seem to remember something like that, but I can't remember the book.
I can't remember the book. I can't remember the author. I know it was one of the more modern books. I think it might have been a Dayton Ward book. You know what I'm going to do? I am going to go to Memory Beta and look it up.
And, again, you know what the problem with a book like that is, don't you?
What's that?
You know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I remember that book well. I just don't remember the title or who wrote it. And I'll tell you what.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It's a crackerjack book, whether you know what the outcome is or not.
Well, that just means you got a good writer, because, frankly, if, you know, it's a book about Kodos. Well, we know Kodos doesn't die until his daughter kills him back on the Enterprise, you know, 20, 30 years later.
Yes. Okay.
And then what bothers me in this is... They said that Riley was really, really young.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he remembers Kodos?
He said, even in the episode, he said he remembered the name.
Okay, that I can buy, but Kodos was going after, or Kodos' daughter was going after him because she thought he could identify him.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm not having a great deal of luck.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around how a governor of a planet can be unseen by people.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was Discovery, Drastic Measures, or what it was. I'll have to read the summary, but oh well,
just
whatever.
To see where it went. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, what's interesting is this is a Star Trek original series novel, and essentially the only Trek characters that we're dealing with is Kirk and Riley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
Sulu's mentioned. Decker's mentioned.
Scotty is mentioned.
We don't see him show up. We do have one other Starfleet officer, Admiral Nagura.
Yes.
Who I think is mentioned in some of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking for a Starship Enterprise book, this ain't that puppy.
No, this is...
It's a totally different system.
This is completely different. Okay, so we already talked a little bit about Kadath. We have Keth and Klor. They are...
Klingons.
They are...
Can't you tell by the K in their name?
They are nasty Klingons, though.
Are they?
Well,
Klor was just following what Keth was telling him.
Right.
In fact, I think he switches sides at the end.
He does. He does eventually, but they beamed into a classroom and shot a kid.
And how the hell did they justify the fact that, okay, Riley didn't put up the Uber screen that Kirk wanted him to put up.
Mm-hmm.
But how do they justify Starfleet having a difference? In other words, if you're doing a security thing and you're putting a scrambler field to keep people from beaming in for security reasons...
Mm-hmm.
Why is there a difference in settings?
Yeah. Yeah. Why? And that's very true. But.
And it's only there to forward the plot.
Right. It's a plot device. So we got some.
Let's run the plot. Let's make the plot work by being stupid.
Well, and that's what Riley did. He did not order the maximum level of protection, and kaboom. All right, so
Like I say, why is there a difference?
Yeah, we have a number of humans.
Students.
Yes, and we have Nan Davis, who is, that's the reporter, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's a reporter that Kirk is running around with and to do interviews. Nagura gives Kirk another job to go around and interview.
Well, I got the impression that Kirk was bored out of his mind because the only thing he really had to do was refit the Enterprise, and then they were going to have to find either something else for him to do or another ship for him to refit.
Right.
Boy, I don't sound like an operations kind of problem.
Yeah. Well, that was his job. Was to supervise refits of Starfleet ships. And so they, Nagura gave him another job of being a public relations guy.
Because apparently, chief of operations ain't that big a deal.
No, apparently not.
Now, operations officer on any starship is a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to assume that an actual chief of operations for an organization like Starfleet has a lot more duties to really do. So was this a brand new position they made for Kirk, or
I
don't know. It's
just, who knows? Well, they gave him the Enterprise to do the refit on, for sure, to just make sure that he, you know,
did it.
That it was his ship to get him into this. But he's not enjoying being an admiral at all. Okay, so let's see, we got some places to go. We have Starfleet headquarters. We have Gadoth's classroom. The Enterprise.
Both of them.
Which, okay, I saw that remark, and I'm not sure exactly what you're alluding to.
They're going to do a parade around the moon for a thing of, I think it was Neil Armstrong's landing on the moon.
Right.
And the only ship they've got available that they could get space worthy was literally the Space Shuttle Enterprise.
Yes, which was never intended to go into space.
Well, they fitted it with a... With impulse engines,
yeah.
And got it to go.
Yeah, and it could go pretty good then.
And let's face it, the Enterprise had to be somewhat space worthy because it was going to go take it up as high as it could and then dropped.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, we have the...
Both of them.
Yes, both of them. So we have the Shuttle Enterprise and we have the fictional ship, the USS Enterprise. Okay. So now we have some things. Let's talk about this fantastical warp sphere. And that is what Gadoth is working on.
You attach it to your hull and it will take you anywhere in seconds.
Yes, it is beyond warp. It's not.
It is beyond imagination.
Yes.
I mean, it's not a technological advancement of what is available to people of this time period.
Mm-hmm.
It's just leaps and bounds. It's almost, if you excuse the analogy, it's like putting a Stargate on a starship.
Mm-hmm.
The technologies are that vastly different.
Yes, it's even beyond the slipstream drive or the transwarp drive or anything like that. I mean,
anything like that, yeah. Those at least were steps up, logical progression of the technology that they had.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This was an almost ex deus machina device.
Yes, yeah, almost. However, the funny thing is Gadoth was already right after it didn't. As soon as he tested this thing, which it went some light years in a matter of 6 seconds and back. Okay. he was already knowing that if when word of this gets out, there's going to be a problem. There's going to be people going to war over this thing.
I had the impression that he'd been thinking about this all the time.
Yeah. He knew this was going to be a problem. So that's probably why he kept it so close to the chest while he was putting it together. So we talked about Klingons as teachers. We talked about the boredom of life Kirk had. Kirk and his wife having a falling out because she finds him negligent. Now imagine that. I mean, what a surprise, eh?
Well, I have to wonder what has happened to the human species that you can have marital relations between couples that are not on the same starship?
Yeah. Well, they were living in the same place, okay? They had an apartment. However, my impression was that Kirk was so busy doing refit on the Enterprise and sleeping either on there or sleeping in his office or whatever, that he was just never home.
Yeah, just like if he was on a starship that she wasn't on.
Yeah, and she had had enough. So she decided that she was going to sign on to a starship and take a long cruise.
And I think Riley's marriage kind of went in the same direction, didn't it?
Yes. She was not happy with him, so she dumped him.
So that, again, gets back to the question of what has changed in human society that you can have marriages of people that are in different parts of the universe.
Well, yeah.
Different parts of the galaxy.
We've seen that all in the TV series where you have, you have a husband commanding one ship and a wife and engineer on another one, and vice versa.
Or even right now in Below Decks, you've got a wife and mother as the captain of the ship, and the father is an admiral back at Starfleet headquarters.
I don't know how that works.
You've got Geordi's parents.
Yeah, and those were the kinds of one I was going to. His mother is a captain of a starship
that gets lost.
Right, and his dad is an engineer, or maybe a retired engineer, I don't remember.
Oh, I thought he was an admiral, but okay.
Okay, so I don't remember. But in any case, yeah, the parents living apart, they're still married.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What has changed? And they've gone to contract marriages.
Oh,
which is an old trope from science fiction stories.
Yeah. Oh,
you don't get married for life anymore. You get married for
a period of time.
Mm-hmm. 5 years, 10 years, whatever the contract is for.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know, actually, I can see that coming. I can see that coming in the future.
Which, again, Alvin Toffler talked about this in Future Shock.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to go to a society that has professional parents?
Yeah, exactly. You know, who knows?
I mean, if you look at it realistically, if you've got a set of parents that are going to be living apart, can they really be expected to raise their kids properly, I want to say, or just in any way, shape, or form that you know, the kids get a worthwhile upbringing?
Yeah.
Which leads to professionals. I think Toffler was going for professional parents as daycare people.
Yeah.
But I think I'm seeing, if you're going to have the parental unit split and they're only going to be able to come together every so often, well, they're not going to want to have to deal with the kids. They may want to visit the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids are probably going to be raised by somebody who's trained to raise kids.
Yeah, could be. Could very well be. All right. So, Gadath, an awe moment in this book. Gadath adapts a foundling kitten. And you know something? I'm wondering if that kitten wasn't any more than just a plot device the author used so that Gadath wasn't standing in his apartment talking to himself.
Well, as long as the cat doesn't scratch one of his eyes out.
Yeah.
You know, in particular, his left eye.
Right.
Where he'll need to wear a patch the rest of the time because he doesn't like the inserts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a minute. I'm talking about Captain Marvel.
Yeah, yeah.
And Nick Fury.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, Gadoth adopts his kitten, and it's kind of cool, you know. Gadoth is not your typical Klingon. He likes Earth. He wants to stay on Earth. He wants to live on Earth, partially because he sees more opportunities to do what he was trained to do. And this adopting the kitten, he talked to the kitten, and the kitten really liked him, wasn't afraid of him, and he took care of it as good as he could. So I would have,
even though it doesn't have fangs.
Right? Yeah. I was wondering.
Let's face it, Klingons adopt targs, not.
Yeah. Well, and then again, too, you know, I mean, furry little things. I didn't know Klingons liked furry little things.
No, but these are furry little things with legs and are not born pregnant.
Ah, I see.
You can feed a cat and it'll get fat, but it won't have little cats.
Yeah, not just from the food. Okay. So,
technically speaking, you're not even supposed to let a cat out of the house.
Yeah. Now we've got these two Klingon guys. they are
agents.
Yeah, their job is to watch Gadoth very closely and report back what he is doing.
Do the Klingons do this to every expatriate they've got in their society?
Well, I seriously doubt it. I mean, if they...
Then why are they picking on him?
Exactly. Well, he's a scientist, I guess. So, you know, I wonder, does
they don't value those people.
Yeah, but does...
I mean, even if you look at Enterprise, you're seeing the Klingons do not value the non-warriors, and why are they going to keep an eye on them?
Well, let me ask you this. Would this be an indication that perhaps Gadoth chose to live on Earth as opposed to Kronos?
And, well, let me put it this way. Wouldn't it have been nice for the author to have said that?
Yeah, but, I don't... Well, we knew that Gadoth preferred to live on Earth. Okay, so if he chose to live on Earth, if he chose to leave Kronos or retrain himself as an engineer or something, which he was apparently eminently qualified to be, instead he chooses to go seek a professorship on Earth, then they want to know why, and so they're going to keep an eye on him.
I'm sitting here staring at the cover of the book.
Uh-huh.
Both Enterprises are on the cover.
Oh. Well, I bought it on Kindle, so I didn't get
it. Yeah, I know that, but you got this. You got the saucer section of the Starship Enterprise in the lower part of the picture, and below that, an even smaller image of the Space Shuttle Enterprise.
Now, I'll have to look at that. So, all right.
But,
it's just
an aside I spotted.
Yeah.
Looking at this thing.
We got classroom. Yeah,
I would like to have seen more of what's going on in the heads of the Klingons than just turning it into just a spy thingy.
Yeah.
Why did Gadoth go to Earth and not Andoria or Vulcan or the Tholian Empire or even the Romulan Empire? He could have gone to the Gorn.
Yeah.
Why did he pick Earth? Yeah, those aren't answered.
Yeah, that's true. All right, we got classroom drama, which is very interesting. We've got kids.
Despite the fact there was no spitballs used. And that's a classic.
Yeah, I haven't seen a spitball in any time during my career.
They still have big pens?
No.
No, that could be why. If you can't tear the pen apart and use it as a blowgun.
Yeah, and the straws are too small. They have these little teeny itty bitty straws to make sure you can't do stuff like that. At any rate,
they still have straws.
Yeah, we have a discussion.
That's a big controversy back here, down here in Florida. You're not supposed to have straws anymore.
Yeah. Now, along with this classroom drama, we have a discussion going on of the differences and similarities and of the Klingon society and human society. And we have some really ugly little things coming out of the human kids.
Yeah.
Name calling.
As one you would, as you would expect from middle school students.
Yeah.
And a Ferner. Damn Ferner.
Yeah. But they're...
But I let these damned illegal aliens in for it.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, that G'Doth is pretty cool about it. He understands that these feelings are there. He knows that they're there, and he reacts as a teacher should.
Or he reacts as a non-warrior Klingon would on Kronos.
Okay.
You know, it's a matter of, yeah, the kids are being mean to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably seen a hell of a lot worse where he was born.
Yeah, probably. Most likely. But I admire G'Doth for the way he is educating and doing a really good job of presenting his view of Klingon society. So...
Yeah.
You know, and he wants to improve relations. So that's, I really like that part of the book. We launched.
And again, there's another, you bring something up
mm-hmm.
that really should have been addressed in the book. Okay, this is an era where Klingons are not interested in improving relations with humans.
No.
So why does G'Doth want to improve relations?
Because he's living there. He's living on Earth. Of course he'd want to improve relations.
But I think you know what I'm getting at is most Klingons would not have cared to improve relations.
No, of course not.
Adversaries are good. You need adversaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, true. Okay.
It's if anything, it's like G'Doth has been corrupted by his stay on Earth.
Yeah, and that's a point of view thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm
especially if we're not told by the author.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'm reading a lot into this that wasn't intended. I don't know.
Well, if you have to, then something's not written that should be written.
Well, it seems to be. It. I don't know. It seems to be implied. I mean, is it really necessary to spell out everything, or can you leave something to the reader?
But if you leave something to the reader, you leave the interpretation of that something to the reader. He's not necessarily going to have come to your conclusions.
Well, yeah, but then that's a risk you take as a writer.
And
you get a whole lot of different ideas going on. Who knows? I mean, I don't see it as necessarily a bad thing.
There are some things that need to be kind of looked into and given some background for.
Yeah, I agree.
And how G'Doth is different from your average Klingon is something that should have been explored more.
Yeah. Well, it would have definitely given the character a different dimension other than being a stock Klingon who was weird. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So they launched the Enterprise space shuttle we talked a little bit about on its parade celebrating a moon landing, and it wound up being instrumental in rescuing everybody from
the only ship they had.
Yeah. So we have our two Klingon bad guys, Keth and Klor, who are going to they found out what G'Doth has, and they're going to haul him back to Kronos, and because the Klingons need to have this technology and not the Earthling. Okay, so it brings up. Well, I won't go there yet, but Kirk wants to make sure that the Federation has it, and the Klingon agents want to make sure the Klingons have this sphere technology that allows them to do all this, and so we get this little political struggle. And we get a battle in space.
But before that, Keth takes hostages.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, as we saw in A Matter of Honor, a Next Gen episode, Klingons don't do that.
Yeah. I, you know, now that you mention that, I did have that thought while I was reading the book, that Klingons taking hostages, and I think that's why the impression came across that these Klingons are just bad guys, because they are taking hostages. They took a young guy, they took one of the kids as a hostage.
Didn't they take two of them?
They took the boy.
Or was that Riley that volunteered to be a hostage?
Right. And Riley stepped in and volunteered to go along with them to atone for his mistake, because it was his fault that anybody was taken hostage or hurt or anything else. He didn't follow orders. So.
Well, yeah, I don't know if there's so much that Riley didn't follow orders as Riley just wasn't thinking through the orders that he was given.
Actually, if I recall, and it's been a few weeks since I read this book, if I recall correctly, Riley was drunk and didn't issue the correct order.
He was having problems with his wife at that point.
Yes. And so he was three sheets to the wind and did not follow through giving the correct order for the maximum security thing. And there again brings up,
of course,
your point.
There is the problem that Riley could adjust the Enterprise to fall into a astronomical body being three sheets to the wind in the original series.
Yeah. But but as you brought up, why would there be degrees of security?
Yeah.
You know, well, we have...
You're either secure or you're not.
Exactly. And one would think, but then again, what story would you have left then? Riley, give the correct order, book's over.
Well, then the Klingons have to find another way to get into the classroom.
Yeah.
Well, no, book's not over. It just requires more creativity.
It also requires more length, and who knows how many words the author was limited to. Okay,
we are talking in the 90s when the books are expanding. They're not limited to 150 to 170 pages anymore.
Right, this one's 224.
But you're still probably not given what you need to go in depth to anything.
Yeah, it's a word. It's a maybe a matter of word counts. Who knows? You know. Give us 10,000 words, and that's it. So, who knows? All right.
Now you're talking a really short story. You're down into novellas or novelettes at 10,000.
Yeah.
In fact, today, Bain Books will not even accept a submission unless it's at least 100,000 words.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, 50,000, I suppose. You know, 200 pages, 50,000 words. Sounds about right. All right, so you don't have to have a fancy lab to invent something important.
Well, not in this case, no.
No. Gadath, well, I suppose if you have the circuits and can order the circuits you need designed the way you want them, why would you need a lab? Which is exactly...
I don't know, but everything else in Star Trek has a massively fancy lab to do any type of research.
Yeah.
Whether it's terraforming or time forming or whatever, you've got an impressive lab that usually gets blown up, but an impressive lab to do what your work is.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Money's no object. Everybody has a replicator, so we can do anything the way we want to do it. So if we have a replicators, why did Gadath have to order a special order? What did he do? Call Amazon and order the chip for his device?
Yeah. I don't know. It depends. You may not be able. It depends on how well you can fine tune the programming of a replicator. Remember, any food item you want coming out of a replicator, you have had to program in exactly the recipe to prepare that item.
Yeah. Well, of course. You have to put in the raw materials to do that.
No. Replicators use energy.
Yeah. Well, you've got to have something to start with, though.
Energy.
Because in the Star Trek world, I thought the replicators were basically transporter technology.
But instead of dematerializing something, it goes to its library, finds the schematic for that item.
Right.
And draws the energy to build that item.
Well, it takes you can't. Can you convert energy to matter?
Yes. What do you think E equals MC squared is?
Okay.
Energy equals matter times the speed of light squared.
Okay. Getcha. I gotcha. I would think you'd have to put in raw materials to, you would have to have, well, if you're going to do food, you have to have food packs. And you put it in there and all the nutrients and all that stuff is in there. And then your replicator just simply puts it in the form you ask for it in.
No, I, like I say, that's not my understanding of replicators.
Yeah, we'll have to look it up. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you know today there are scientists, physicists that are working to build programmable matter?
No, it doesn't surprise me.
It means, which is basically, do you remember the movie Doom, D-O-O-M, and the wall would turn into a door and turn back into a wall?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's programmable matter? You've got a computer program that's going to tell the programmable matter of a wall to transform itself into a different object. Use the object, and then you can turn it into something else.
I see.
So as long as you've got the energy to do it, you can manipulate the electron fields, and they're showing that, that the actual outer skin of matter is the way the electrons are bound together.
Yeah.
But you can manipulate that to get what you want.
Wouldn't
now,
that take...
if you started with material, you can take the material that you start with, break it down into energy to transform it into something else. So, yeah, you can start with matter, but you don't necessarily have to.
Okay.
It just takes, I don't know if you've ever tried to work with the equation E equals MC squared. You can get a hell of a lot of energy out of very little matter.
Well,
but it takes a hell of a lot of energy to get a little piece of matter.
Yeah, and so that would make it impractical, wouldn't it?
That depends on how you're getting your energy. We really do not understand how dilithium crystals work.
Well, see, one of the things that I thought about here is I read a book several years ago. I read a lot, but I read a book several years ago, and it explained...
You have how many book podcasts?
Yeah. It explained, that there never will be a transporter. There's never going to be a transporter simply because of the energy it takes to break down the atoms the way they talk about on Star Trek, transmit them somewhere, and then reassemble them. The matter, the energy alone it would take to break the molecular bonds, you can't even do it.
And it's not molecular bonds that you're breaking. You need to break the bonds down in the quantum realm.
In a subatomic level, yes.
You need to break matter down into energy.
Mm-hmm. And it
that's what you're doing in a nuclear reactor.
Right. And it is, and you cannot do that with a person or another object.
Well, they're saying you can do it with another object as long as the object doesn't have something like intelligence that has to be kept intact.
We don't have the physics to do it yet.
No.
We don't have the understanding of physics to do it yet, if ever.
But remember, there is a difference between we can never do something and we don't have the science yet.
Mm-hmm. So, at any rate.
Interesting turn of phrase, because we were talking about the rate of conversion of energy.
Yes. So, what's your favorite point of plot in this book?
Oh, I forget.
It's a nice, steady...
It's just a steady tale. You know, there's no individual scenes that stick out. There's no pretty much favorite point of plot to take into account, because it's just a continuous story that builds to the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of said the same thing. Maybe...
It's steady state.
Yeah, maybe it seems like a bit of a cop-out, but I just like the book. all the way from the beginning all the way to the end. I did enjoy it. I mean, sure, there's some problems here and there. There's a plot hole here and there. There's things that we could have filled in, but I still liked the story.
Wait. This is a Star Trek novel, and you're telling me there are plot holes in it?
Yeah, one or two.
you're telling me that there's a plot hole like Scotty watches James Kirk die in a movie, and then decades later he's in Next Gen and thinks Kirk pulls the Enterprise out of mothballs to come save him?
Yeah, I know.
Plot holes in Star Trek?
Yeah.
What are you saying?
You know, they're all over the place, and we love them. All right, so I came up with a couple of themes. We talked a little bit about cultural relations and education. Do you think that being more aware of how other people are, having personal experience with those people, do you think that would help cultural relations?
It's always been a maximum of travel broadens the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So just going out and about and meeting new people makes things better. We found out in the SCA, groups in the SCA that traveled had a different relationship to the kingdom that we were all part of than groups that were insular and didn't do any traveling.
Mm-hmm.
They thought of the universe as their shire, their barony, where the travelers could see the whole kingdom as their area of play.
Mm-hmm.
And you could take it a step further because the SCA is made up of many kingdoms, and there were events that had multiple kingdoms as a part of them. Those people even had a broader perspective.
Yeah, I absolutely think that getting to know somebody personally, if they are a good person from another culture, and that exposure will help your understanding, aside from not knowing somebody, you know. So, yes. Mentorship and feelings of obligation. So that was Kirk and Riley. Kirk had felt he owed Riley because Riley was very, very young when Kirk rescued him at Tarsus IV. So, any comments on that?
Nope, that sounds about right. Literally speaking, if you rescue somebody at a very young age and you keep an eye on them over the decades, yeah, you'll get a feeling of, you know, I'm a big brother keeping an eye on the guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, another theme that was in this book that I thought was prominent was immersing oneself in their work and not paying attention to their personal obligations. Kirk is a workaholic. By extension, Riley is a workaholic, and they pay the price.
As opposed to Gadath, who, while he's immersed in a project, he does see his kids as something he should work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his students. He cares about his students. Now, at the early part of the book, he would leave them in a heartbeat if a university gave him an offer of a position. But at the end of the book, he feels differently. He gets a lot of offers because of his invention. He gets a whole lot of offers, but he chooses to stay with the kids that he's teaching.
Yeah.
Gadath is a good guy. He's someone I would want to know and work with. All right. So.
And now your next statement here, though. Everyone wants to exploit the new technology.
Yes.
Well, that seems a little bit out of place. Even today, you've got a lot of people who new technology comes along and we're really not comfortable immersing ourselves in it because there's getting to be too much of it.
Yeah.
And we know how to use this, that, and other thing to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
But to use the newest thing, we've got to possibly change our whole way of thinking to get the job done.
Not in the case of this book, though.
No, not in the case of this book. This book totally ignores that.
Everybody that knows
about... I don't know that I can think of an example of a book where that's even considered.
No, of course not.
New technology in a book is always good and always adopted.
Yeah. Well, see, the point I'm trying to make here is Gaddath is a nobody, okay? He is a nobody as far as possible university peers would be concerned. He's a nobody as far as the Klingons are concerned, except that they want to watch what he's doing. And he's just a nobody. And then all of a sudden, he's come up with this new technology that will drive a starship vast distances in the blink of an eye. And everybody wants to be his friend now. Right? The Klingons want him back. The Federation, Kirk wants to protect him, so to make sure that the Federation gets his technology. And if there were any others involved, they would be the same way. There would be everybody, and it'd be almost like a bidding war. Hey, Gaddath, come on over here. We want you to work for us. No, we want you should be working for us. You know,
technically, the next novel is the hunt for Gaddath.
Ah,
you
yes.
know, this, because yeah. there are too many alien cultures that would just go ahead and abduct him.
Yeah, you could have
not
a whole
do the
series.
Bidding war thing.
You could have a series of Gaddath stories. him getting captured and him escaping and Kirk coming to save him so that the Federation got this new beyond warp drive or whatever they called it in there. So it's just that, you know, he's a nobody until all of a sudden he's an instant celebrity because of the work he's done and not because of his teaching. That was the original reason Kirk went to meet him, is because he was a Klingon teaching human students. But when they found out about his technology that he had created, it was a whole different thing. Let's move into closing thoughts. I'll let you start with this one.
This novel was written before Star Trek III came along, and Star Trek III is the movie where Paramount hired Mark Okrand to come up with the Klingon whole language. So the Klingon language in this novel is still Klingonese instead of Klingon whole.
Oh.
You know, since you see very few words in Klingonese, because basically it's Mark hasn't had a chance to create the language yet.
Uh-huh.
It's just referred to. You will see after Star Trek III novels, after the Star Trek III, the novels that come after that will start using elements of Klingon whole in part of the story to kind of, you know, give you a feel for what the characters are actually saying. But we're still not there yet with this one.
Yeah. Okay. And then
And then my next thought was,
yeah,
why the hell did Kirk get married? Really, is this his lifestyle? Or, I don't know. Why did he bother to settle down? Was it that he's in Starfleet now and he needs to adapt to the culture that he's a part of and settle in? But I think we talked about earlier, he's too much of a workaholic to settle down, you know?
Yeah.
He's still got to keep moving, and that's kind of the stimulus that busts up his relationship here.
Yeah. Well, you know, he tried apparently, so... According to this book, anyway. But now, Kirk was not married in one of the movies. All right.
I don't think he was married in any of the movies.
Oh, gosh. Which one was it? Which one was the one that with the Nexus?
Well, that's Generations.
Generations. Okay.
It's so, after Star Trek VI.
All right. So, he was going to get married in Star Trek Generations, remember? Because he was going to fix, when Picard was there and they were at the cabin and he was fixing her breakfast in bed, and he was going to go upstairs and propose marriage to her. Of course, now that was in the Nexus. It's not, you know, it's part of that movie.
It could just be a memory from this particular marriage.
Yeah. So he, you know, he was, there was somebody that was special to him. I don't know if it was the same character or not, but I guess that's neither here nor there. Okay. You know, I just thought my closing thoughts are just an outstanding story, looking at another side of Klingon culture. You know, we've seen Klingon farmers. Now we see a Klingon scientist. who prefers to live with humans rather than on his own homeworld.
Or with the other scientists that we've seen them living with in Star Trek Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have since been able to find this book that I was talking about. So I'll just put this out there, and I feel kind of dumb not remembering it, but it is Drastic Measures by Dayton Ward, okay? And the Tarsus story is part of this. They have a colony on Tarsus IV yet, still in that time. And Philippa Georgiou is in charge of being the in charge of the colony. So part of that is a fleshing out of the history that goes through there. So yeah, it's her and Lorca are on the cover of this book. And as I said, it's a good book, and it really fleshes out the story and lets you know what happens to Kodos after the incidents that we learn about in Conscience of the King. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. Did you read that one, Drastic Measures?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah.
But I don't know when I would have read it. But like I say, it sounds familiar.
Yeah. Well, there's 8,000 people. Distress signals have been sent. Okay, that's that. Lorca and a small team assigned to Starfleet monitoring outpost and bear witness. Okay, so Georgiou and Lorca go to Tarsus IV to try to catch Kodos.
And if I remember correctly, it's actually the real Dorkin.
Uh-huh.
Not the Mirror Universe one.
Correct. So they're younger, and they are not captains yet. And Lorca's a lieutenant commander, and Georgiou is a commander. So, yeah, this would have happened before the events of Discovery. They apparently went to follow up on the Tarsus IV thing. So that's what that book's about. I recommend it, because I do remember it was a great story. So Dayton Ward's Drastic Measures in the Discovery Universe. All right, well, that about brings us to the end of this show. And next time, I think we're going to be looking at The Klingon Way by Mark Okrand. That'll be an interesting one.
And that's going to have to be done in a little different format, people, because, as I recall, The Klingon Way is a bunch of proverbs from the series with an explanation to go with them.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's not a story.
No. Yeah, I gathered that. I bought a copy. It's on the way. It's not available on Kindle. It was only available through certain vendors with and they're used. So I got one for $7 used. Supposed to be in decent condition. So hopefully when that shows up, we'll figure out how to approach this one.
Yeah.
So
it will be different.
Yeah, so if you're listening to us, you know how to find us. We would like you to spread the word. Tell everybody. Get up on a soapbox and tell everybody how to find this podcast. It's one of my favorite ones to do. I enjoy this. So,
or if you really disdain taking a bath or showering, climb on top of a Volkswagen and shout it to the world.
There you go. Whatever works for you.
Whatever trips your trigger.
Yep. So, for Bound by Honor, I am Judge Jim.
I am Jorn.
And join us next time. Kappa! You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kurg Zantai Loon Keej. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!